Welcome to Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast, where business leaders tell their stories and share their insights. All our guests have a personal connection with Nottingham Business School. So listen, learn, enjoy and share.
Welcome to another episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast with me, Mike Sassy. Salma Toucan is a curator and cultural leader. Since 2023, she has been director of the Nottingham Contemporary. During her career, she has worked with international galleries and arts organisations all over the world. For 8 years, she was the inaugural curator of Middle Eastern art at London's Victoria and Albert Museum. Salma's own cultural influences began in Kuwait, where she was born into a Palestinian family. Her father was brought up in Lebanon, her mother in Libya. Today, Salma lives in Nottingham. Salma Toucan, welcome to this episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast.
Thanks, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great stuff. So you've been in Nottingham for 2 years now. How have you found the city?
Yeah, we've loved it. So I moved with my husband, who's Guatemalan. We moved to Nottingham 2 years ago. And as I was saying to you beforehand, I think we found that actually the easiest part of all of this job has been moving to the city. It's just been incredibly generous to us. There's a lovely community. The cultural ecosystem here is completely interdependent and very open and kind. And I think just thinking about cultural background, for me, it also resonated in that Nottingham has a long history, obviously, of disruption, of social justice, of activism. And that resonated in a very deeply personal way with my own heritage and upbringing and also my values.
And we'll talk about that in a moment. But did you, was this instrumental in you taking the job?
I think it factored in a big way. I think both of us, both my husband and I, were very curious for that reason. We had a relationship, and I had a relationship with Nottingham Contemporary previously. I'd, in my previous capacity at Delfina Foundation, had collaborated with Nottingham Contemporary. I'd also collaborated with New Art Exchange. So there was a relationship with Nottingham as a city, but it was really kind of a new challenge.
Right, excellent. So your predecessor, Sam Thorne, was one of our very first guests on this podcast 4 years ago. So we know a little bit about what the role of the director of the Nottingham Contemporary is, but how do you spend most of your time?
It's a really interesting question, Mike, because I think it's worth saying maybe at this point that I'm not sure exactly when the interview happened, but so much has changed in the sector over the last 5 to 8 years and will change even more so. So I think the conditions around institutions and the conditions for producing are so radically different. You know, when you think about the financial landscape, let's look at the city, the cuts and bankruptcy of Nottingham City Council, who in our case are obviously our main partner, but also our landlords. Clearly, more and more city councils who are also facing the same issues, having funding cuts for other partners, the strain also on universities, but also other factors like the environmental crisis and really thinking about how you balance being sustainable alongside maintaining an international program, and other factors that are increasingly coming into play, like the mental health crisis that I think, you know, we really need to acknowledge. Ultimately, we're organizations comprised of people and we need to value that. And other elements is, such as culture wars, where, you know, the bread and butter now of institutions have to be also thinking about their reputation. So the conditions at the moment, I think, increasingly are becoming very, very precarious. Many organizations, ourselves included, were set up on models that are no longer existent, you know, such that they're funded by Arts Council, local city authority, and earned income. And most of these have changed.
So obviously you were, or are, a curator by trade. Now you find yourself with a very substantial leadership position for all the reasons you have just laid out there. How have you been able to develop the skill set to deal with that?
Well, I mean, my background is in curatorial, but it's also in cultural strategy. So I've also worked in many different previous roles on how to set up roadmaps for institutions. It's certainly the most challenging period to be sort of helming an institution. And I think it's fair to say that many institutions haven't necessarily been future-proofed. So, you know, it's sort of interesting conditions to sort of find you know, an organization to think it through. But at the same time, maybe looking at also my own background, I come from a part of the world where it is a luxury to have, you know, an arts council. Many of the countries that I, you know, from the region don't have an arts council and have to rely on really thinking in very resourceful way. So I'm a big believer in actually being agile and nimble. You know, having said that, I think it's fair to say it has certainly been a big learning curve over the last 2 years. And some of it has been very challenging. But I think that's where mindset and mentality and looking at sort of challenges as opportunities is really fundamental.
So you just hinted upon there, you started talking about your own history and heritage and where you come from and what you know, how actually, you know, we should be quite lucky to know what we have there. Just explain all that.
Well, I mean, I'm Palestinian. I come from a part of the world, the Middle East, where in some countries there's a huge amount of infrastructure, but in plenty of others, there aren't any perhaps arts councils. There's not a huge amount of private giving. So people have to be really resourceful in their approach. You know, I do think institutions in this country are facing increasingly compromising conditions and really have to be much more agile in order to succeed. Having said that, when I compare it to many other parts of the world that I have worked in or come from, it is still a sort of privileged position to be in.
Do you think your history and heritage makes you a more resourceful leader? As you said, you have to be resourceful on a day-to-day basis.
I would like to think so. I think we're all work in progresses, and I've learned a lot over the last 2 years, and I'm sure I'll learn more in the kind of period coming up. But I think in terms of attitude and approach, maybe that has been shaped by my reality, but also perhaps my upbringing as well. I do fundamentally believe actually in people, and that has kind of carried through my whole career, and it certainly leads into my leadership style. And I do believe that there's a lot of opportunities and challenges, and really it's a case of kind of attitudes and really thinking about opportunities that are embedded in some of these.
Okay. So I read something that you wrote where you said that you was perhaps slightly envious of people who had a strong sense of upbringing to a single place. So how has that feeling where your upbringing taken you all around the world, you've been here, there and everywhere, you've now landed in Nottingham, you love the place, but how has your background influenced your leadership?
In a very, very big way. I mean, as a Palestinian, I think in terms of my own experience in the Palestinian condition, which is, you know, living in a world where your identity and your essence and existence is constantly under threat of erasure, that's contributed hugely to a very strong sense of identity, but moreover, on principles that I feel very strongly about and that are very integral to my identity, which is centered really in equity, in honesty, in transparency, and in also social justice. So that really lends itself hugely to the principles that I believe in leadership, which is ultimately really about community, and it's about people. You can only really succeed. Your strength really is the sum of your parts.
Mm-hmm. You've been a curator for 2 decades. You started out, as I say, curating after you graduated. It's obviously where you wanted to take your career. Now you're moving into a senior management, a leadership role. You know, what do you know now that you wish you'd known when you started?
That's a really good question.
Because there's a big gap, isn't there? There's a big difference.
In some ways, there is and there isn't. I mean, I think in the sense that you're always sort of hacking and adopting skills along the way. And I think to be a curator is not in the sort of purest sense, is really thinking about project management. It's relationship building. It's thinking about collaboration. It's also fundraising. All of these elements that are integral are, you know, comprised of a kind of multitude of skills that you need. And I've gone from, you know, the V&A was a huge organization. My job just before I joined Nottingham Contemporary was in a very small organization called Delfina Foundation, but a hugely agile organization.
What's the thread going through these things? Because you're right, you know, you've moved on from, you talked about hacking skills all the way through there. What is the thread that has taken you through this path?
I think it's really focused around supporting people, you know, and really creating spaces. The V&A, as you said, it was an inaugural role. It was the opportunity to really shape how the Middle East or how the V&A engaged with the Middle East and embed it across the institution, whether that be through commissioning, placing works, developing exhibition program, innovating new programs coming out of that. Delfina Foundation really came from a desire. It was an organization I really believed in and still believe in.
Tell us a bit about it.
It's a nonprofit organization that's comprised of about 7 people that ultimately is supporting residencies for international practitioners, be they artists, designers, writers, curators from all over the world, and also an exhibition program alongside that. But ultimately, it's about supporting people and really, you know, acting as an incubator for practitioners.
And you're having to raise money, which is tough, isn't it? I mean, that's what your job is, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I think that has also been a strand of all of my roles. You know, whilst I was at the V&A, in order to develop the projects that I wanted to do, including developing an acquisition policy, I've always understood that that has to be a part of it and that there's also creativity in fundraising.
But that's tough, isn't it, in this environment?
I would say it's challenging, but I also think it's exciting. You know, looking at something like Nottingham Contemporary and comparing it perhaps to something like Delfina Foundation, we were always very aware in Delfina Foundation about how to create a diversity of income streams and not be so wholly reliant on one source. And I think all of us across the sector have seen how fragile that can be when you're confronted by a pandemic, when you're wholly reliant on one source of funding. At Nottingham Contemporary, a huge amount of money funding that we get is actually from the Arts Council, and it's essentially public funding. And whilst that's fantastic and it's something that we feel very strongly about, they're our key partner, I do believe it's important to diversify income streams. And I think there's entrepreneurial avenues in which we haven't really tapped into or haven't really thought through. You know, for example, one of the areas that we're looking into at the moment in the institution is understanding that we don't have that many physical assets to be able to hire out, but really thinking about the creative capital that exists within the team. We have a hugely skilled team that have skills from project management to learning, marketing, technical support, and so much international experience. And we have a network out there. So how do we really think through potential consultancy opportunities where we're actually capitalizing on that knowledge, that know-how, and the work that we're already doing? So I think there's a huge amount of potential in that.
You clearly love what you do.
I do.
And I don't expect you to apologize for it, but I'm just going to say, do leaders... successful leaders need to absolutely love it? Is it something that you have to do by choice rather than saying, look, I just want to be in charge?
Well, you're probably better versed at answering that question than me. I think you've probably had many, many kind of leaders come through that. But I think at least in our sector, there's, you know, we have a very passionate workforce. People love what they do. They're hugely motivated. And some of the conditions are not the most sympathetic. You know, the kind of pay within the art and the sector is challenging. Of course, we have a cost of living crisis. It's all of these elements. But people love what they do. And I think it's important to create learning and development opportunities and to be as ethical as possible in terms of how they're compensated as much as institutions can.
Is there a balance that you have to achieve? Because you've been talking about all kinds of ideas and entrepreneurial notions, things that you have to do to keep the lights on, as it were. But, you know, and yet people are there, as you say, because they love it, because they love the art. They love the sector. They love what they do. And you're always having to keep one eye on the balance sheet and say, come on, we're not going to survive unless we're doing this. So is there a balancing act to be had there?
Definitely. There's definitely a balancing act. There's a balancing act between really also thinking about the workforce and the pace at which we're developing things and how much we're doing as an organization, maintaining our deliverables to our key stakeholders like the Arts Council in terms of our principals, and at the same time, really thinking through the ambition of the organization and upholding its profile, the commitment to the city. You know, we're also really aware of the effect that the bankruptcy has had on all of our city residents. And the role of institutions is also changing with that in mind. We're not only a space to encounter art, we're also a key, you know, gathering point for the community. We're also a warm hub with the cost of living crisis. We're also a space for new arrivals entering into the city.
I mean, you're taking on a lot of responsibilities there.
And I think that's a good note that you raise, because I think on the one hand, institutions like ours are taking on those responsibilities, and many of those responsibilities generally do sit with the government. They're part of social services. There is a balancing act to be had. We can't be everything for everyone, but I think we feel a very strong civic sense of responsibility.
So now we're going to take a quick break from our chat to mention the MBA programmes at Nottingham Business School. As we've learned from many of our guests, effective business leadership is about confidence, adaptability, and thinking strategically. These are the key ingredients to delivering innovation and impact in crowded, competitive markets. So if you are ready to transform your career, visit ntu.ac.uk/MBA to explore the MBA programs at Nottingham Business School. We're one of only 1% of business schools worldwide who hold the prestigious Triple Crown accreditation. That's ntu.ac.uk/MBA to find out more. Now back to the show. Okay, I come back to it again. On one hand, you are, you know, you're evangelical about what you do, but you know, you are a business, you have to raise cash, but by the same token, you've got this social dimension where you're propping up certain elements of the community.
Well, we're a charity, but I hear you in that we do need to be attentive. We do need to understand the importance of being financially sustainable, and that's one of the kind of key principles. We've been doing a lot of work as SLT or senior leadership team over the last 4 or 5 months on developing a business plan, thinking through till the end of the decade, which is particularly thinking through how do we future-proof the organization. And for me, on a personal note, that's something that's important. I do feel very strongly about leaving something in a better place than where you found it. And also at this idea of multiple hands working on something. So you're one chapter in its long history, and it's important that there's sustainability within that. So I think there's an element of thinking through future-proofing the organization. But as you said, it's an incredibly challenging moment to do so.
Okay. So as with all leaders, as you become more successful, as your profile increases, so increasingly you become a role model for those around you. What difference has that made to your leadership?
Having this platform?
Well, you know, on a very simple level, people looking up at you and thinking, I want to be like that.
To be completely frank, I don't think it's had a huge impact.
Is it something you recognise, or is it, you don't?
No, I do recognise that. But I don't think on a personal note, it's really fundamentally changed the way that I operate. And that's partly in that, you know, I've been raised in a household and in a community that believes very strongly in the principles of generosity and about supporting people. So looking back at your previous question, that has been a thread in both my career, but also what I believe in, which is always amplifying, always creating space for others. I think the main difference here is that I'm aware that I have a bigger platform, and I have become, through, you know, this role, my previous role, I've had a bigger platform in which to do that. And I take that, you know, I acknowledge that.
Okay. Anyway, it doesn't make any difference to how you operate. You're just glad that you're able to help, as it were.
No, it doesn't fundamentally change, because it stems again from values, which is really about, irrespective of whether I had a platform or whether I don't, it's really about trying to create space for others and trying to support people. And I think that's a fundamental characteristic and value I've had. It so happens that I have a bigger platform, and that affords me greater opportunities to do so.
Okay. So reflecting on your career so far, are there occasions when you think, you look back and you think, you know, I could have done that better. I could have made a better decision.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. There's plenty of examples of that. And there will be plenty more. You know,
so come on, give me one where you reflect on it and you say, I did this when really, you know, if I thought about it more, I should have done that. And that's a learning experience for me.
I mean, I think one might be even kind of entering into the institution and understanding the pace in which you work and really taking the time to then, it took me a while to then understand the team around me and understand that people work at different paces, people communicate in different ways. So I would definitely say that there was an adjustment, you know, after kind of learning more about that and actually adapting yourself, you know, in order that you become a better leader. There's been so many more learnings across the way, some that are very incidental and some that are larger. And I believe that it's important to kind of learn from mistakes that you've made or lessons. That should be a constant evolution.
And what do you look back on? Anything specific where you look back and you say, yes, that was the right decision?
Well, I mean, one of them is recent changes that we've made also to staffing. So, you know, we've had our chief curator at the moment will be leaving shortly into a great new role, which we're very excited about. But we've taken that as an opportunity to really think about how we internally promote and creating learning and development opportunities. And it's been hugely well received amongst the team. They're very excited at the challenge. Some of the new people in those posts are excited about having more agency. So I think that's definitely one that immediately you can see the ripple effects it has in the organization.
Okay, got you. Okay, so I'm dotting around here slightly, but modern leadership is very public, particularly, I'm guessing, in the arts. It's not just social media, but, you know, people like yourself are more high profile. How do you manage to deal with that and maintain a healthy life-work balance?
Oh, I don't think I do. I think if you ask my husband, I'm not sure whether he would agree that I have a healthy work-life balance. But I also think that that's not necessarily just, you know, because of the job. I come from an activist background. And, you know, a lot of my time outside of my job is focused around causes that I believe very strongly in. And as we look around the world, which is becoming ever more hostile, I think it's important that we, you know, maintain our voices, we advocate, we do whatever is within us to be able to try and better improve conditions and, you know, hopefully improve society around us. So I would definitely not say I have a healthy work-life balance.
So I guess you're lucky in that you have a leadership role within something which fits very well with your personal life. Is that right? Your interests, your loves outside of work are similar to those in work.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think all of us working in the industry love what we do. Most of our spare time is spent maybe visiting exhibitions, doing studio visits, you know, having, you know, immersing yourself in culture. And in my case also, my personal time is also spent thinking about social causes.
Okay. So, finally, as you know, this is a podcast for the Nottingham Business School, full of leaders, would-be leaders, graduates, undergraduates, postgraduates, sponsors, partners. If you were to look back on your career so far, what one single piece of advice might you offer those people?
To be honest, I think it would probably be to also sometimes know when to not take things too seriously and really be able to take things in one stride. I think that's definitely something that I would have liked to, when looking back at so many instances in my career, including things that at the time I might have imagined were huge challenges or obstacles or things that went wrong. And actually, in many of these cases, sometimes they turned out to be blessings. Sometimes they ended up improving the situation, or they simply were failures, but that was actually important, you know, to sort of kickstart learning, or again, a work in progress. I think this attitude of putting it in perspective and sort of taking it in your stride and actually rolling with that is important.
So maintain a healthy sense of perspective.
Yeah, and be open to pivoting.
Open to pivoting. Salma Toucan, thank you very, very much for sharing your experiences and being so open with us on this episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast.
Thank you, Mike.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast with the Director of Nottingham Contemporary, Salma Toucan, why not listen to previous episodes with the CEO of Nottingham Building Society, Sue Hayes, the Chief Marketing Officer of Boots UK, Pete Markey, or the former Vice President of Manufacturing at Toyota Europe, Marvin Cook OBE. This episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast was produced by Russell Bingley and presented by Mike Sassy.